Hello, welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, a podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. Greg Evans, my usual partner in crime, is yet again on annual leave, so with the busy winter schedule, we've given him a rest from podcast duties. This week, I'm joined by The Athletic's Wolves writer, Tim Spears, to preview the big game at Molineux on Saturday lunchtime. And then later on in the show, I'll be joined by Samuel Timms from Villa and Proud, the LGBTQT plus fan group, to talk about the strides made by the network and being an LGBTQT plus Villa fan. And right now, if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can give another subscription as a gift for free. It's the perfect present for any football fan this Christmas. Enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one. It's the perfect present for yourself and someone else, so just go to theathletic.com/villapod. That's theathletic.com/villapod and sign up now. Hello, Tim. Thanks ever so much for joining me behind enemy lines today. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to have you on off the back of a 4-0 defeat, it's fair to say, rather than having you on after Wolves have won. But just to start, obviously, I'm making a little quip there towards the rivalry, but I just wanted to ask you about it because I've got some thoughts my side of what I think about it that are probably a little bit biased, but I just wanted to get your take on this rivalry. That I know they've always been rivals, but it's developed a little bit over the last few years from, I think, when Dr. Tony was the owner of Villa. There seems to be a little bit more of a rivalry now since that time in the Championship together.
Yeah, that season kind of sparked it off, but it seems like a bit of a fake rivalry to me. I don't know, it's all played out on social media, whereas in reality, I'm not sure they're exactly the worst of enemies. No. I mean, from a Wolves point of view, I mean, I grew up supporting Wolves in the 90s and Villa were just irrelevant because, you know, they're on a completely different level. Do you know what I mean? Maybe that's what it feels like to be a Walsall fan. Everyone's just kind of out of reach. So it's hard to hate them, I suppose. But I guess you can always judge a rivalry by if it's acceptable for players to transfer between those clubs. And I think there are quite a few instances of Wolves and Villa trading players over the years. I remember we bought Steve Froggatt and Tony Daly back in the day, and then Hassan Kashlul came on loan, I think, at one point as well.
Good memory.
so you can always judge it on that, really. You know, if there was an Albion player moving to Wolves, well, it just doesn't happen. It hasn't happened since 1993. There'd be uproar and maybe even blues, to be honest, but. Yeah, no, I mean, we tried to nick Tammy Abraham off you as well a couple of years ago when he was on loan.
Yeah, I remember.
So there would have been no problem with that from a Wolves fans' point of view. So it's all sort of on Twitter, and you know, we haven't played the Albion since 2012, and I'm not going to talk about when we last played them because we're not allowed to talk about it. So
I think I remember the game.
I remember it well, deep in my memory somewhere. So and then it has ramped up, I suppose, in the past couple of years, but I don't consider Villa to be main rivals now.
No, I mean, obviously there's the local element to it, but I think you're right with what you say. It does seem to have been stoked by social media over the last few years. Obviously, the Wolves have got the whole mind the gap thing, which is fair enough. That was fun.
I did enjoy that, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's because, like you're saying, when you were younger, it was irrelevant. As a Villa fan, from a Villa point of view, it's the same for me. We'd never really played Wolves when I was growing up, so I didn't, as a Midland side go, I didn't mind Wolves at all, but since you have got promoted, the gap between the two clubs felt like it was getting pretty big in Wolves' favour. I mean, you've been an excellent addition to the Premier League, and I've nothing but respect for what you've done, but it does feel a little bit this season like Villa have closed the gap a bit more quickly than I thought they would have done. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, definitely quicker, and you're right about the whole mind the gap thing. I mean, Wolves fans need a little excuse to kind of lord it over a club that was once perceived to be a lot bigger than them. And, you know, there's been a lot of that the past couple of years with things going, you know, so well for Wolves. But yeah, I think Wolves fans wouldn't have expected Villa to have such a good season this season after kind of only staying up on the last day last season. And, you know, there's definitely a level of respect there for what Villa have done and what Grealish has done. I spoke to someone. I was at Port Vale away last night for covering the under-21s, and someone came up to me and said, "Oh, I'm worried about this weekend. We can't lose to the Villa." So there is a kind of a feel about it that Wolves very keen to remain top dogs in the Midlands because it just doesn't happen. You know, from Wolves' point of view, it's been decades since Wolves have been the top dog in the Midlands, so they'll want to cling on to that non-existent title for a little while yet.
Yeah, because if you'd have said to me even this time last year probably, but I think back to the end of last season when you came to Villa Park, and to be fair, it was a terrible game. You beat us 1-0, but we felt like you were on a different planet to us. We were worlds away from getting to that level. So it is amazing to just think in one transfer window, you do feel like it's a lot more level. What do you think Villa have done to close that gap? Do you think it's solely down to the transfer market and what they've done there?
That's got a massive part of it. And Wolves spent the summer investing in the future, you know, with buying a lot of young players and not necessarily massively improving the first team. And I think in this strangest of seasons, the summer had a lot to do with it in terms of having a break and having a proper pre-season. I heard Dean Smith talk a lot about how great it was to have a full pre-season, and that's kind of helped them hit the ground running, as they certainly did in the opening four games. Wolves were the complete opposite. They had a 30-day window between two seasons, which is just crazy. And out of those 30 days, they spent about two or three together on the training ground preparing for the new season, which is just unheard of. And especially for a manager like Nuno, a training ground manager who thrives on that time with his players. You know, he just didn't have any. And they basically had a couple of weeks off. They had an international break, ridiculously, before the start of the season. And then they managed to squeeze in two or three days training before the start of the season, which has really had an impact on Wolves. And Villa, the opposite, because Dean Smith, A, made some great additions, and B, got that crucial, five, 6 weeks with the players to really kind of hone their style for this season, which has worked really well for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's something else that's going to have a massive effect on Wolves. I've been reading your stories over the last few days in the lead up to the game, and obviously Jimenez, who we all wish well, he's going to be a huge miss for Wolves. You've labelled him the pivot of the team. How worried are you for Wolves without him?
There is a concern. I mean, Jimenez has played every single Premier League game since he signed initially on loan in 2018, and his goals plus the goals of Diogo Jota and Matt Doherty, who they sold in the summer, accounted for 55% of last season's goals. So I did a bit of maths the other day and counted up the goal-scoring exploits of the 11 that took to the field at Anfield on Sunday and lost 4-0. And last season, those 11 players scored a combined 32 goals in all competitions, including international appearances. So they're not an 11 that's going to be full of goals. And Nuno's got to find a way, either with new personnel in January or perhaps with a different style this season, to get goals out of these players, because traditionally they don't score many. And there is an issue without him and his. Fortunately, but if this was going to happen at a certain point, you'd want it to happen before a transfer window so that they can try and bring someone in January. But they've got five games before then, and Jimenez is only back up in the squad is 18-year-old Fabio Silva, who, yes, was bought for $35 million, but he's not ready to fill that role by any means. So there's a lot of changes at Wolves at the moment. You know, the Wolves that played Villa last season, it's a very different team now, very different formation and a different style, and they're still trying to work out what their best 11 is, and you've seen that inconsistency in results.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Villa had that last season. Dean Smith didn't know his best 11 probably till after lockdown, and it does have an effect on what happens, because I've been quite interested by Wolves' change of system over the last couple of games. And to be honest, it's not something I really like. I don't think it suits you at all. I think when you've played with the wing-backs for so long, I think it's really weird to see Wolves line up with four across the back instead. Do you see him sticking with that long-term?
See, the thing is, you know, Wolves had two amazing seasons, finished seventh twice, and they did it with quite a defensive style, a 3-4-3, but really, you know, they'd be getting nine men behind the ball at all opportunities and trying to hit teams on the break, especially against kind of the big six. And they had a goal difference. I think goal difference was plus one in the first season, and they got it up to plus 11 last year. But I went through all the goal differences of teams who've qualified for Champions League, which is where they're aiming. In kind of the past 15, 20 years, you need a goal difference of plus 20, plus 30, really, to be challenging the top four. So I think Nuno thought he's got to change it. And he said at the start of the season, you know, he wants more goals, more possession and more domination of matches. And he said it's a new cycle and they've bought players for the future and there's going to be a kind of a gradual change of style. The season started and they were really struggling for goals. I think only the bottom three or four had scored fewer. And then Connor Cody had to miss a game because he was self-isolating. And I think Nuno used that as an excuse, really, to kind of see what four at the back would look like. And that was against Southampton a couple of weeks ago. They ended up having more shots than they've had all season. A really good attacking performance, but very flawed at the back, which you'd expect with a new system. Then they went to Arsenal and won 2-1. Again, some fantastic attacking football. And then they've gone to Liverpool and been torn apart. So it's getting that balance right between defensive rigidity and the need to find and score more goals, which is what Wolves are going through. Ideally, he'd have done this during a pre-season campaign, but he hasn't been afforded that luxury. So that's why he's doing it now, and it's trial and error. And that's why Wolves are kind of stuck in mid-table at the moment.
Yeah, there's a little caveat to that system change is that Villa have played the last two games, and we've lost them both to teams that play three at the back. Mm. So do you think that'll come into Nuno's thinking at all?
I think we will see a horses for courses approach with this formation. I think in hindsight he'd have gone to Anfield and reverted to what he knows and sat deep and soaked up the pressure and tried to hit Liverpool on the break. But he went there with four at the back and no focal point up front. So it's very unusual to see a Wolves team like that. And lo and behold, they got torn to pieces in the second half. So I think he'll look at each game individually and decide on his system for it, depending on what the opposition looked like. However, at home, with the onus on them to attack, I think he may stick with 4-2-3-1 for this week.
Okay.
And maybe bring Fabio Silva back into the team is what I'd probably predict. The thing with playing the three behind the striker is your three are Neto, Pedence and Traore, which is just, you know, phenomenal pace and skill and attacking talent.
Yeah.
And if Silva can play ahead of them, okay, he's 18 and he's a kid and he's very raw, but at the very least he can distract defenders and be a nuisance to kind of open up space for these three behind him. And I think that's what Nuno really likes. But like I said, getting used to four at the back and Cody as a centre-half in a four and Nelson Semedo at right back, they are going to potentially leave themselves exposed, which is what Villa will look to exploit.
This is all sounding very good, Tim. I'm liking what you're saying here. And Adama Traore was obviously at Villa for a bit. We didn't see the best of him for all kinds of reasons, mainly the fact that we were pretty much a mess the entirety of the time he was with the club. But he's been on the bench a fair bit for Wolves this season. I mean, I know Jimenez is injured now, so he'll probably play a little bit more. And Traore ripped Villa last season at Molineux, absolutely killed us. I presume he's going to start.
I would have thought so, yeah. He's had a difficult year, you know. Everybody, he had this amazing purple patch just over a year ago between kind of September and December that year, and he was phenomenal. I've never seen a run of form like it from a Wolves player.
He killed us.
He was doing it week after week to everybody, and I think before the end of January last season there'd been about 25 players had been booked for fouling Traore, which is just phenomenal. It was the only way to stop him was to foul him. And then and then he had a shoulder problem, so he dislocated his shoulder during a game and it popped out. And they popped it back in and he played on. But this kept happening. It happened three or four times in the space of about 3 months. And you could see it had affected him on the pitch. You can almost see he's thinking about it, if you know what I mean. And I guess you would do, because a couple of those times, it was just a little tug on his shoulder. Harry Maguire did it once at Old Trafford. And it just a little tug on his arm and his shoulder popped out. It must have affected his mindset. And we haven't really seen him back to his best since then. And obviously he's a massive target now, and players know if he's playing, they've got to stick two on him at least. West Ham stuck three on him a few weeks ago. So he's trying to modify his game, and to be fair, he was great at Arsenal a couple of weeks ago. Looked like the Traore of old, but his end product has fallen off a cliff. He hasn't scored in the league since last December, and he hasn't registered an assist since June. So I mean that
worries me more than anything, to be honest, that you're saying all those things.
Wolves and Villa fans are quite similar, because that'd be my mentality as well, to be honest. But it's not all about goals and assists, you know. Chance creation's more important at the end of the day, and without him they wouldn't have scored either goal at Arsenal a couple of weeks ago. He was instrumental in the build up to both. So and he has, yeah, it was Matt Target. He had a great time against, I think, last season.
I think Target ended up coming off, actually.
Yeah,
and because of him.
Yeah, I remember tweeting at the time that he'd come off with an injury of embarrassment, because he got torn to shreds. But yeah, that was right in the middle of Traore's purple patch. But if he can get Target isolated or whoever's at left back, then like I said, he's almost impossible to stop.
Yeah, I don't remember Neil Tyler faring much better, to be fair, when he came on. Villa have like developed this annoying habit that I think Wolves have had maybe the year before last, where they're beating the big teams, the teams you wouldn't expect them to beat, but then they go and lose to Brighton at home. Am I right in thinking that Wolves had a phase like that as well?
Yeah, the first season they came up, they lost.
Annoying.
Huddersfield won three games that season, and two of them were against Wolves.
Oh, yeah.
And it was bonkers. But they were brilliant against the top six, and that was sort of down to their style of play, really. They were very adept at sitting deep and defending and hitting teams on the break, whereas when teams came to sit off them, they did struggle, and teams would kind of out-Wolves, really. So they're still kind of going through that phase of trying to become a top team that can overload and dominate with possession and score lots of goals. You know, it's not easy to do that, and they've spent a lot of money and not really made huge inroads in that regard yet, but it's a long-term project. You know, Foden are convinced that Nuno's here to stay for a while, and they think over the next few years they can still kind of evolve and become a top four team that can dominate small teams at home, so to speak. But yeah, they do still have that issue as well.
Yeah, finally from me, the big question, not by so much around the weekend, but which of the two clubs do you think has the biggest chance of being the so-called best of the rest this season? Because it's an open Premier League, and it feels like if there's going to be any season for Villa or Wolves to take advantage of that, it's going to be this one.
Yeah, no, you're right, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, if you ask a Wolves fan now where Wolves are going to finish, most would say that they're not going to repeat the top seven finish of the past two seasons. And I think there is an acceptance that this is a bit of a transitional season for Wolves. However, they can still grind out any result on their day, and I still fancy them to beat almost any team that they take on. So if they can make a couple of shrewd additions in the January market, which they need to, particularly in terms of a striker, then I'd back them to push for top seven, maybe even push top six again. And it's difficult to know with Villa, because they start the season so well, and then the last few weeks, they lost four or five, is it? Four out of the last five?
Yeah, we've lost four of the last five. Yeah, that's right.
So I don't really know what Villa are yet. I think it's still a bit early to call, really, with them being so inconsistent. So I think on their day, Wolves have still got the edge over Villa. But with it being a transitional season, it'll be obviously a lot tighter than last year. But I think I'd back Wolves just to edge them this season. We'll both be well ahead of the Albion. That's all that matters, mate.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. If we're not ahead of the Albion, I think there might be some form of problems going on. It's been great to talk to you. I've really enjoyed catching up and speaking to you, and I'm not looking forward to how many goals and assists Adama Traore is going to get at the weekend. But all the best for the rest of the season, just not on Saturday.
Nice one, mate. You too. Cheers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Saturday's game at Wolves is Villa's Rainbow Laces fixture, so I had a chat with Samuel Timms from Villa and Proud to talk about that and much more ahead of the game. Samuel, a pleasure to have you on 1874. Personally, I think it's a really important thing to raise awareness of Villa and Proud, which you're heavily involved in. So for those who don't know, can you just tell us a little bit about the group?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan.
No worries.
Yeah, so the group is an official group to Aston Villa Football Club, and we were set up in 2018. And our mission is to empower, support and build LGBTQ+ inclusion, which stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer and other, for fans, players and staff of Aston Villa Football Club. Our whole role is to make sure that Villa Park, in our terraces, at away matches, that we can support a community. And that's not just with fans, that is with, like I said, players and staff of Aston Villa Football Club.
Because I'm lucky enough that I've never really felt like I couldn't be myself at Villa Park. I've always felt welcome, never had any issues. But unfortunately, that won't be the case for everyone, which is why what you do with Villa and Proud is so, so important. Do you think there has been an improvement around the place in acceptance in the last few years? I just wanted to know, have you ever felt uncomfortable at Villa Park?
It's really interesting. I'll go on to your last point. I always feel uncomfortable at Villa Park. I've been going all my life. My dad's been taking me from a little boy. I've always been worried that, for example, I would never in a million years, and I don't think I ever will do until the day that I die, is hold my hands hand in hand with my boyfriend Gary going to a football match. I could never do that walking to Villa Park. I love Villa Park. I'm Villa through and through. It's a fantastic venue. We have fantastic fans, but it just takes one fan to sort of say something that might just completely spoil my day or Gary's day. I always get a bit worried about taking a photo and that, but football is changing. You know, we're having conversations that we never would have had. For example, in 1988, for example, you weren't even allowed to, so a law was brought in, you couldn't even talk about LGBTQ plus rights at school, and that was only lifted in 2003. So it really wasn't that long ago. So 17 years ago, were we then allowed to talk about LGBT people? That's teachers, that's pupils, just talking about that. And that thing, that has a knock-on effect in football, is that it all becomes hush-hush and something that potentially goes against the grain, especially in the male world, where we're all sort of raised into football. I was just standard kids who loved playing football at school. And every weekend, I lied about doing my homework and just wanted to go and play football. And the thing is that I didn't fit what I thought was a stereotype of an LGBTQ plus person. And we just need to remember that in football, but it is changing.
Yeah, I just find that quite, not sad, sorry, the sad is sad the right word, but I feel sorry that you feel like that at the football. But then again, I completely understand it, because it only takes one person to ruin your day, and your day is ruined. It takes one person to say something stupid and your day is ruined. And I just think nobody should be made to think like to feel like that in life, let alone go into the football. And it's just something that doesn't sit right with me. And I'm sorry to you, because I don't want you to feel that. Like, I've got to know you a little bit over the last few years, a great guy and someone who's doing some great work and trying to help other people, and you don't deserve that. How inclusive do you think Villa is, and how has it been for you to work with the club directly?
You know full well that Aston Villa is a beast. It's a massive club. But sometimes just when you're a big club like that, processes are a little bit slower. There's a lot more people work there. Brand is a massive part of the club, and equality for the club is huge. I've had the privilege of speaking to people high up at the club, and they've reassured me and they've shown me their plan where, Aston Villa want to be that top six club in everything that they do, and equality comes into that. Sometimes what happens is that equality never used to be in the top 10 priority things for a football club. Now you look across the board, equality, diversity and inclusion as a whole comes into a top 10 requirements of what a club wants to do, because the thing is, they're staff members. Like, we look at players, they're staff members, they're employees. Yeah, they get paid a lot of money, but they're employees at the end of the day for a club. And the fans are literally like, imagine you're at work and just sort of this person just come around your desk and you're typing away and someone just starts shouting abuse at you, and you're not typing quick enough, you're not doing this, and then calling some sort of derogative words that are going to hurt you. And it's not just about LGBTQ plus rights. It's about making sure that football is welcoming to people of colour, faith, religion, disabilities. And we have a lot more women as well that you see at Villa Park, which is great, and across the country. But I think Villa as a whole, the way I look at it is Aston Villa is a massive oil tanker, and we're trying to turn a corner or try and put ourselves into reverse, right? and going to a different way for equality. But to turn an oil tanker takes a lot of effort. It's quite slow. You know, I wish we were a speedboat and we could be really agile and turn quickly. But things are really, really changing at the club, and it's great to see.
Yeah, and that's great to hear as a Villa fan who wants everyone included as well. I'm really, really pleased to hear that. Now, I know the postponement last week of the Newcastle game at Villa Park. I know you guys have plans around the game, which is really disappointing. So the focus now shifts to the Wolves fixture, which is an away fixture and is the club's official Rainbow Laces game now. How important is that campaign in raising awareness?
It's huge. You know, Rainbow Laces itself... The laces themselves, to a lot of everyday people that don't really get you know, LGBTQ plus equality, they don't really get it. I've been in conversations with people that have never really been affected by, you know, maybe they don't know someone that's gay or in sport or whatever. The campaign itself gives conversations to be had. You know, it's great to see that large organisations like you know, Sky Sports, BT, the Premier League, the EFL, you know, institutes, Aston Villa and major sporting clubs around the country support it, because a lot of it all comes down to action on what we can try and do, and we have to action positivity at clubs. But visibility is a real key point to start a conversation. You know, why do we still need to do these things? And, well, why do we do them? You know, and the whole why is to make sure that we can empower people to turn up to football matches. You know, we can empower, you know, Villa and Proud have a banner at Villa Park. It's 30 foot long, right? It's huge. And the thing is, I always think that players that walk out onto the pitch and see that, and all the directors, because it's facing across all the boxes in the Trinity Stand, it gets to make people to start thinking. It gets people to start thinking about why LGBTQ plus has to be visible like this. It's purely because we don't have an out and out gay player in the Premier League or the EFL, top divisions, and we need to realise why that is, because statistics will, you know, is definitely in favour of there's going to be a player out there that's gay or bisexual.
Yeah, I mean, someone who is out and someone I know very well is Thomas Hitzlsperger. Now, and I know he's offered the Villa and Proud group support, and he's just an unbelievable guy. I'm so proud of him. How has it been working with him and getting to speak to him?
Oh, it's unbelievable. Like, you know, I'm 30 now. I feel like I'm old, but
still young, mate. Still young 30.
And Thomas, when I was growing up, and you know, going to the Villa with my dad. I always remember the goal he scored against Birmingham, and and he was the sort of starting point for all Villa fans to start shouting "shoot." And I remember listening on TV and the commentators going, "Do you hear everyone shouting shoot?" And that all came and stemmed from Thomas, and he was a great football player, and everyone judged him by his football. Yeah. And for someone like myself, and there was other people around Villa Park. Coming to terms with their sexual orientation, you know, their sexuality and gender identity is a huge issue and something that causes a lot of anxiety in people. And for someone like Thomas, yes, he did it. This speaks volumes. You know, he came out after he had played on the pitches, played on football. But there's a lot of questions to be asked because, you know, why did that have to be that way? Was he open in the changing room? You know, and the thing is now what you see is that obviously the Premier League is a global brand. You know, top players from all around the world want to play in the Premier League. People want to watch the Premier League. I think it's broadcasted in 188 countries. You know, I don't even know how many millions of people watch it, billions or whatever, but a lot of these countries that do watch it, you know, being LGBTQ plus is illegal. And some of these countries, it's punishable by death, you know, and that's crazy to think that simply your sexual orientation is something that can be so poorly exposed across football. But we know that football has the power to really open conversations up And it has a community with inside Villa Park and stadiums up and down the country. But Thomas Hitzlsperger is a really, really good voice for us. You know, he's an ambassador. He works out in Stuttgart. You know, he's highly respected as a person. He does a lot of work around equality. And I just think that his voice, he gets to communicate with Villa fans, because any Villa fan that starts to worry about, like, oh, what's this got to do with football? Why are we bringing LGBT stuff into it? Well, Thomas is one of them. He's one of the statistics that have blessed our club, but someone that could never feel comfortable coming out to the Villa faithful while playing on the pitch, you know, and those are the sort of questions we should make sure that Villa Park, the players, staff and fans should always be welcoming.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we were talking just before we came on to record, and I was saying, I think when I was a kid growing up, I'd have 100% heard homophobic abuse in the stands, definitely, and it wouldn't have been called out. Whereas I think we're in a place now where if someone was to do the same homophobic abuse of players on the pitch or people in the stands now, I genuinely think a lot of fans would stand up and say, you can't say that. So in a way, that's quite refreshing, isn't it? Because I do think we're in a different place to when Thomas was actually playing, because I think that's the time I'm alluding to, and that would have been when I would have heard things.
Yeah. Honestly, we do something at Villa Proud. We have a campaign. It's been running for a year, just over a year now, called Villa Allies. And the way I looked at it when I set up Villa and Proud is that we don't want to be LGBTQ+ exclusive. We are everyone inclusive. And what that means is that we've got to try and talk to everybody. We're talking about our lives, you know, and we all have a passion for football, Aston Villa, and we should be able to use that one common interest in empowering us all to go, do you know what? We should step out at Villa Park and we should be very proud fans. We should be making sure that our club is leading by example, and fans can have that power to do that. You see things that have obviously happened with Millwall and that, and yeah, the damaging effect it has on a club by just the minority of people doing it. And I do want to stress a minority of people at Millwall. Sure. And the thing is that calling out discrimination is so vital, and it's really simple to do. But sometimes it's also really daunting for someone to do that, because someone might feel a little bit worried, intimidated to say something. But if we can try and empower more and more Villa fans, and these are same fans for up and down the country, to be together in allies, because I'm an ally myself, you know, I'm an ally that supports race equality, disability, sexism. I want to get rid of the game. You know, yeah, we need to make sure that we can all together as one voice, and the club can use this platform as well, because Aston Villa Football Club as an organisation is the biggest ally without a doubt, because every single person that is devoted to the club will listen in some way. And sometimes this is where damaging effects come from campaigns like Rainbow Laces, is that because a lot of people that don't really want to sort of engage with it, they say, oh, it's just sort of put on players to say stuff and the clubs to say stuff. What I do want to see is clubs, the Premier League, empowering these clubs to go and make their own campaigns that are really strong. And let's use that competitive edge that clubs have on one-on-one with each other on the football pitch, but let's have it off the pitch, and let's have a proper celebration of community equality.
Yeah, I mean, I think education's a massive thing here, and I include myself in that, as I am a Villa ally, but there's always room for me to be educated. I think from what you've just said, what I've taken away there is the fact that I've asked you to come on this week, but why haven't I asked you to come on at a different point? Why is it taking a bit of Rainbow Laces campaign for me to ask you to get involved in a podcast? So that's poor from my side. And as I say, there's an education to be had for everyone, however much of an ally you are, there's always room for learning. And the main thing is, I think we all love Aston Villa, so that's something that every one of us has in common. So hopefully, mate, I hope that can be used as a positive, and it can drive a change. And I thank you ever so much for joining me today, and I really, really, really love talking to you, and I appreciate you coming on, pal.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Loved it. Thanks, Dan.